Listen and stream the all-new talk radio, Freedom 106.5, for the only talk that matter.
All right, good afternoon, friends. It's now 8 minutes now after 12 noon. It's time now for your favorite lunchtime doctor, Dr. Sophia Mohammed, getting ready to answer all your medical questions. Good afternoon, Doc.
Good afternoon, Bees, and good afternoon to everyone tuned in. This is your lunchtime doctor, Dr. Sophia Mohammed, here to navigate those difficult medical challenges, here to offer some advice, some consultation. Let's see how we could dissect those medical troubles. And let's hear what's on your lunchtime plate. I love to hear the feedback, the health habits that you've learned from this program and who you are sharing it with. And to all those on the road out there, I hope you're driving safely. Stay tuned for the next hour. This is Dr. Sophia Mohammed.
All right, your numbers, folks, are 627-3223, 625-2257, and 3061065. Remember, we're on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sky 99.5 FM, Vibe City 105, and Sangeet 106.1.
So today, we know we're continuing the conversation on male health, men's health. This entire month is dedicated towards men's health awareness. And why so? Today, we also share another important factor. In what was shared recently by John Hopkins is that out of, say, the 10 deadly things or the 10 major health concerns that one may unfortunately endure with, be it prostate cancer, be it lung disease, the consequences of smoking, men fall way behind in even reporting about it. Here's something that's really startling. One article said it may take something like 2.5 years for a male to present with chest pain. He may have it, he may feel signs and symptoms of it, and not until it's literally at the end. And this is what we want to change the narrative. We want to make sure that you know what are the red flags. You feel something, you identify something, brave up, man up, and go to the doctor. Because if you see something or notice something with your car, you certainly are going to get it checked out. We need to save lives. We need to save lives across the board, both our women and our males. But we want to ensure we're protecting those who are not protecting themselves. That's why this entire month we're giving that attention to men's health. But to our female listeners out there, feel free, call in with your medical concerns as well. We're addressing that as well. Over to you, Bees, with those numbers again.
Yeah, let's take a call. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchtime, doctor. Yeah, good afternoon. Yeah, we're hardly hearing you, so yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yes. Hello?
Yes, go ahead. Yes.
Who is this? Randy?
Randy?
Oh. Yeah. I just called in to find out. Hello? I just called in to find out what has caused your mouth to get dry on any night.
Thank you so much. Now, here's the thing. In most of our diabetics, we actually see that they experience this dry mouth, especially in the night. It may be as well one of the key things that we see with our patients, if there's any sort of obstructive sleep apnea and the mouth is open during the night, then you are going to wake up in the morning with this really dry mouth. Another key thing that we see with our patients is if there's any oral disease, so any hygiene concerns in terms of dental disease, gum disease, gingivitis, you may also experience that dry mouth. Another key important thing is certain medications, some sleep aids or even antidepressants. One of the side effects of those medications is indeed this dryness of the mouth, even antihistamines. So keep in mind your medications may have that dry mouth side effect, and it's so important that you have these conversations with your healthcare professional. I just shared to you the more common reasons. There are other reasons, but these are the ones that we see most commonly in the clinic. Hope that answers your question.
Okay, Doc, good afternoon. Let's get a WhatsApp. Hi, good day, Doc. My sister has upper back pain. I believe she is 62 years old. Can you help?
When it comes to back pain, that is one that needs to be established and evaluated with your healthcare professional. Back pain has multiple reasons. It may start from different triggers, the way you're sitting at your desk, the ergonomics. It may be related to the spinal cord, the disc, if there's any compression. It may be related to a musculoskeletal injury or past trauma. With back pain, let's definitely consider that a red flag. It will only get worse. And please take that brave next step and go get it checked out.
All right, Doc. Can we talk about some ways that men, since we're dealing with Men Health Month, some ways that men can relieve their stress besides, smoking and going by the bar and taking a drink, which is something that men love to do associated with relieving their stress. What are some ways that men can relieve stress?
Well, I see many persons now are jumping onto the fitness trail. They're hiking. They're getting their male friends together. They're also engaging in different spiritual activities. You're seeing a number of mentorship activities happening. They're bringing on the younger ones. They're bringing them together in circles where they are opening up and having these didactic conversations. As simple as those little lines, even in the River Limes, all of those are ways to connect and relieve stress. We just need to manage the alcohol intake and, of course, the smoking intake. Bringing together as a community, you could take that community outside of the bar and from hiking to exercise to even opening up and having those conversations. So those are just a few that I've actually observed in my general interactions, and I see it working. You know, you actually even hear when families talk about doing activities together where they get the time to bond. All of those are stress relieving methods.
Okay, good morning, Doc. I had a hysterectomy recently and there's a hard mass to the side of the incision. What's the cause and how do I treat with it? Thanks.
So when it comes to the hysterectomy, for all those who are not too sure, that is the removal of the uterine cavity, that particular muscles there, and of course the area. Now what we in that hard mass, I'm not too sure if it's on the skin surface. It may be that because it's a suturing, as in there is a surgical process involved, it may be the way the skin heals. Some person's skin can heal with a keloid, and that keloid may form over the suture. I'm not too sure if that exactly is the hard mass referring. I would suggest the very next time you go to your healthcare professional, you bring that to their awareness. Sometimes it may be we may need to do a further ultrasound just to double check on it. But from what you're describing, it definitely sounds like it may be a keloid healed over the suture mark, which is all normal.
All right, folks, of course, our numbers are 627-3223, 625-2257. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. Doctor, is exercise necessary for housewives, knowing that they walk and do plenty of housework all day?
Great question. So yes, it is still necessary. That exercise you may have been indulged in may not hit the aerobic zone. So you may have numerous steps counting in, but did it bring you to the point of actually sweating, where you're burning some calories? Another very important type of exercise is building muscle. One may think, no, housewives don't need to build muscle. That's not true at all. As you age, we want to strengthen those muscles, because we know as we age, those falls and slips happen. And then another very important exercise is balance exercises or flexibility exercises, especially yoga. And again, we see those slips and falls. We see fractures on the hip, the ankles, on the hand when persons are falling in that outstretched hand. So to the housewife, yes, I understand you're having numerous steps in, but let's try to be a little bit more holistic in the range of exercises. Hope that answers the question.
All right, good day. This is a question I believe we had last time and we didn't get to it. Good day, everyone. My husband has a chronic cough for years that comes and goes. He did every test possible. Barium tests, Doppler tests, endoscopy, x-ray of the lungs, but they show nothing. Yet, it's still there. One doctor said acid reflux, and he's on Omez. But no help.
Omez.
Yeah, Omez. Can you help me, him, please, doc? Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing. I empathize. I feel that distress because a chronic cough is one that can be quite debilitating. Now, you did mention a couple investigations, but they tend to more have leaned on the gastrointestinal to rule out probably GERD or reflux or any sort of that endoscopic type methodology. I didn't hear any sort of examination as a post-nasal drip or any sort of allergies. Sometimes even allergies can worsen or cause that chronic dry cough. Another thing that I would want you all to check on is, just like we mentioned early on, that the dry mouth, one of the side effects of certain medications is dry mouth. There are certain medications that the side effect of it is indeed a chronic dry cough. So I'd want to make sure that that is also checked on. And in terms of making sure that it's not just investigations that's happening, but a detailed history and examination. I'm sorry you went through already so many investigations. I would suggest one more detailed investigation. Try another healthcare physician and let's see and help you get to the bottom of it. So we talked about possible interactions or side effects of medications. We talked about the possibility of something called a post-nasal drip, any sort of autoimmune disease that may present with the cough, and of course, any sort of allergies or changes in the environment and the temperature that will also present with a cough. Hope that answers your question.
All right, let's get a call right here. 627-323-625-2257. All right, we lost that one there. It's the lunchtime doctor. Of course, we're on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1, Vibe City 105, and Sky 99.5. 627-323 or 625-2257. We go back to the... What? No, let's take a call. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, doctor. I am hypertensive. When I walk too much, my feet swell and hurt. And then my heart will start to hurt, I'll get chest pain. But if I continue, well, I'll get the chest pain severe. The doctors have given me isodil, I don't know if they call it, isosorbinitrite. And that last night I took it, and it was raising up my heart, and I couldn't sleep. So I would like to know if I could stop the tablets completely.
Thank you so much for letting us know. I'm so sorry you're going through all of this. But first and foremost, we will never encourage anyone to just stop their medications like that. Your healthcare professional is the one to ease off or give that guidance, because this last, just say, 10 seconds of you sharing your medical information is not detailed enough for me to be able to see if the medications need to be adjusted. You do have some serious health concerns. And yes, the isodil can increase the heart rate. However, it is definitely used for the treatment of that chest pain. But what we do know is that there must be a consistent usage of it. We need to have the concentration built up into the system to allow the body to get adjusted or work with this particular medication. Anyone who's hypertensive should also not just be on hypertensive medication, but also on cholesterol lowering medication. And from what you described, that swelling in the feet, you may even need another one called a diuretic to help ensure the circulation in the lower limbs are indeed optimized. Yes, unfortunately, for any cardiovascular patient, they may have quite a few medications that they're utilizing, and all who are cardiovascular patients, they they know they discharge probably with a prescription of 5 or 6 medications plus. And that's why we try to be consistent with the medication and, of course, look at the lifestyle measures so we can ensure that a list of medication is not increased further. Hope that answers your question.
All right, the lunchtime doctor, can diabetes be diet controlled?
Excellent question. That must come from a first-time caller. Yes, yes, yes. In fact, the cornerstone, the mainstay of diabetic management is nutrition. The only time we would say that it's not only diet control is in your young ones who are type 1 diabetics, where the body is not producing enough insulin, and they specifically will need insulin to help them manage that conversion. But yes, diet can suitably manage early onset diabetes. If it's further on when there are complications, then we certainly will need to augment with medications and probably even insulin. But if you just watch your sugar values, watch your intake of cholesterol or your saturated fats, and watch the intake of processed foods, you certainly can manage your diabetes. Hope that answers the question.
Hey, Doc, how do you deal with nightly cramps in the legs?
So we talked quite a bit about these nightly cramps in the legs, but let's kind of review it. The more common things that we see right here in Trinidad is, first and foremost, as one ages, that is part of one of the symptoms that they experience. If there's any sort of arthritic process, the arthritis could be at the joints, at the ankle, at the knees. That will worsen any sort of night cramps. Another very, very common reason is diabetic nephropathy or hypertensive nephropathy, where the nerve endings have been damaged. Now, once there's nerve damage, there's no way to recoil that damage. And that's why we talk so much about prevention. If you're experiencing these night cramps, please present right away to the healthcare profession. Yes, there are treatments, there are medications, there are even multivitamins that we can help, that we can prescribe to help that night cramp. So I hope that answers your question.
All right, Doc. Hi, Doc. Can a female go through menopause at the age of 37?
So we did mention something like this early on. Yes, there's something called perimenopause, where one may start to experience some of the symptoms. Keep in mind, the definition of menopause is once a female has missed 12 cycles completely, then that means you're entering the menopausal stage. The mean age for menopause tends to be 48, 49, 50, 51. However, we do have, based on the hormonal treatments or hormonal levels in the person, we have seen persons at that age experience signs of perimenopause. Hope that answers the question.
This one is coming from Sangeet. Hi, good day. My husband's, I believe it's fingers, bend and a paining. What is that and what is good for that?
Now, from what I gathered there, it may be a cramp he's experiencing or some sort of on the bending he's getting that pain. There can be quite a few things. We didn't mention the term dehydration early on, or if there's any previous trauma. Last but not least is, again, that hypertensive or diabetic neuropathy, where the nerve endings are damaged. But let's start with the common things first. Let's make sure your husband is well hydrated. That tends to be one of your more common reasons why someone may experience those cramps, electrolyte imbalances even. But in this case, because it's the fingers and the bending, again, it may be the ergonomics in play, it may be previous history, previous trauma, but let's get it checked out. Hope that answers your question.
All right, of course, 4627-3223 and 625-2257. Good afternoon, doctor. Does a stroke or heart attack associate with high blood pressure always?
Thank you so much for that very important question. Yes, yes, yes. You see, high blood pressure is the precursor for a heart attack. High blood pressure is the precursor for a stroke. While one may have a silent heart attack, and what does a silent heart attack mean? You may not have any symptoms before, and then you may experience the first time ever onset a heart attack. That can also happen. But majority of our patients that we see experience a stroke or a heart attack, their blood pressures were indeed elevated or offset or dysfunctional at some point in time. We talked about some of the medications that if one has a heart attack, what about the procedure, the cost of that? I am here to let you know that the procedure, by time you go through surgery, recovery, rehabilitation, you're close to well over $100,000, well close to $250,000, versus knowing your numbers and preventing it. That's why you all know I advocate so much for the lifestyle habits and being more proactive than reactive.
All right, let's take this call here. Hello, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon. Mm-hmm. Yes, doctor, I want to find out something. I have a pain on the right side of the hips on my stomach. Comes and goes.
Yes, any sort of right-sided lower abdominal pain, the first thing we want to rule out, depending on the age and the history, of course. Yes, adults can also present with an appendicitis, but there can be inflammatory conditions of the gut. And this is something we'd want to make sure that it isn't any gut-related dysfunction, any peritonitis, any damage to the peritoneum itself. It could even be pain from the kidneys that's radiating. So there are quite a few things that we'd want to rule out. I won't know what your history of any sort of gut concerns. There are quite a few, especially in that right lower abdomen, that one may present with. Here's the thing. If you are experiencing any vomiting, any nausea, any diarrhea, any sort of increase in your body temperature or fever, please present right away to the ER. Hope that answers your question.
And speaking of right away, here's somebody else with a question who needs to go see a doctor right away. Good afternoon, doctor. Yes, my husband keeps complaining about getting a pain on his left hand and it's feeling numb. Also, stiffness on his chest. What can cause this? Does it lead to a heart or stroke?
Yes. You know, I'm really hoping that persons who are sending their messages, they take the advice. Please. That any sort of pain on the left hand, any sort of pain that you're describing on the left side of the chest, that is most likely, again, angina or a precursor to your heart attack. And that's something, yes, as you mentioned, you ask, can it be even a stroke? The pain that presents with that heart attack, it's something called an emboli. It blocks off the artery. If that emboli or that clot goes to the brain, then you can also experience a stroke. So as Bay said, and as I said, we may be joking when we say right away. It may sound jokey, but it is very important. And here's the why. Time matters. When one presents with a heart attack, we have a window of time to embolize. And embolize mean to break up that clot or the embolus. And that time frame or that window to break up the clot will also dictate the heart function afterwards. So like everyone who listens and tunes in regularly, know I talk about my mother. My mother had a massive heart attack. She's one that had quite a stressful life, past school principal, and we know what school principals endure. And she is as well one of those persons that deprioritized her health. She dealt with the whole world, took care of the whole world, excepting herself. That heart attack happened on Eid day in the masjid. And she thought it was simply the the activities of the day and the preparation that she was feeling, this sweating and this pain. We rushed her to the hospital. Luckily, I ignored her statements. No, no, all is okay. No, no, I'm not feeling that much pain. And trusted my gut. The time frame for which we were able to get her to the hospital and then to surgery was crucial, so that even when they did put the stent in and operate on her, her recovery was good enough. Recovery as in the heart functioning. So there's something called the ejection fraction. We read in the papers, we hear about stories. Recently, there was a 5K and a medical professional, he ignored the signs and symptoms and unfortunately on the track, unfortunately succumbed. So anyone can be weak towards not being in the space of acknowledging this is a heart attack. I understand. I'm not here to judge. I'm here to guide you. I completely understand. But we want you to be proactive and we want to save your life. So that person who sent that message in, please take your husband right away to the ER. Hope that answers your question.
Right away, right away. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the Lunchtime Doctor.
Good afternoon, Bess. Good afternoon to the doc. Doc, I'm sitting on my workplace some time ago. And all of a sudden, I felt a strange sensation in my right arm. After examining it, I realized I could not lift my right arm. No part of my body else, other part of my body was affected. The right side, nothing. The left side, nothing. Was just, I could not have lifted the arm. What could have been the contributing factor to that? Thanks.
Hold on the line. Are you still there?
Yes.
Did the pain resolve? Did the numbness and the lack of mobility resolve? Or it's
after
still there?
After that time, I spoke to my doctor and he sent me to Mount Hope. But I can't remember what was the outcome of it. So it's just as I thought right. about it, I said, look, let me ask you, what could have been a contributing factor?
There's something called TIA, a transient ischemic attack, where just like we're talking about stroke, so that part of the hand may have endured a mild stroke. So it's called a TIA. Because there was a resolution of the symptoms, there would have been an occlusion in the artery or a blockage in the artery where that area, that entire part of the hand, so it may be high up, would not have gotten proper perfusion, and then the nerves, the arteries, the veins, the entire movement is now blocked. If there is indeed, you said you went to the doctor, they may have probably given you certain medications, they were probably able to break up that clot, and that's where you were able to have return of normal function. And you are one of those blessed persons where your functioning of your hand has returned. So we call that a TIA, transient ischemic attack. If it was more severe, then it would have progressed a stroke and you may not have returned to that normal functioning of your hand. I do hope, however, that you have done some things like an ECG, an echo, or a stress test. And here's what the stress test is. We literally put the heart under stress and see how does the heart respond. So it's like preparing for an emergency. When I say put the heart under stress, we put you on a treadmill, allow you to go at a certain pace, increase the pace. We may also do a chemically induced stress test where we inject certain medications to see how the heart will respond. We look at the ECG and see if there are any areas of blockage. Just looking at the heart, from there, we can then guide the medications. If you need to be on medications, if you need to be on exercise, physiotherapy, or any of that supportive therapy. But I would want to recommend strongly that you ensure you know your blood pressure, you do an ECG in particular, so you know the functioning of the heart. Hope that answers your question.
Can an irregular heartbeat contribute to that?
Definitely. So with the irregular heart, so is it that you have had an arrhythmia and probably on some medications for the arrhythmia?
Yes.
Right. So in the with the arrhythmia, let me explain that part now. The irregular heartbeat will be easier to send off these occlusions or the cholesterol plaques or any sort of embolus that blocks the pathway. And that's why I hope you're on your medications for the irregular heartbeat. You're also keeping check of something called the PTT INR, because if they place you on, say, even warfarin or whatever medications for the arrhythmia, we need to also monitor that closely. Hope that answers your question.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, dear. Let's take another call. Of course, you're listening to Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1, Sky 99.5, and Vibe City 105 FM. The Lunchtime Doctor. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, my brother, Bees.
Sir.
Salaam alaikum to the doctor. Doc, ever since listening to you, right, when I wasn't feeling well, I went to the doctor and told me that he will be putting me on high blood pressure tablets and some other tablets that do with the acid in the body. Now, listening to you, right, if it is okay, if you have an office where we can come and see you, if you need to change with doctor, is that okay?
That is perfectly okay. Thank you so much for asking. And as I've shared to all of our listeners right now, the minute we reopen to see individual patients, I will certainly let you know. I've been balancing a few other projects and a couple company medicals, and then we will move back to seeing individual patients very soon. Thank you so much for asking.
All right, 627-3223, 625-2257. Doctor, what causes dryness under the feet? Dryness under the feet, is that diabetic, related to diabetes?
That is indeed related to diabetes, but also related to foot hygiene as well. Sometimes it might be a fungal infection. Sometimes it might be poor foot hygiene that may lead to that dryness. If, however, it could simply be not moisturizing enough. You see, just putting that pressure on our feet on any given day, there is a buildup of calluses, buildup of dry skin, and just taking care of our skin, taking care of the feet, can reduce that dryness. Dehydration as well can show in the skin in several ways, and especially in our peripheries. Yes, diabetes is your number one culprit, but let's also make sure we take care of the simple things, like start with moisturizing.
All right, let's get a call here. Hello, good afternoon.
Hello, good day, Doc. What's the functions of alpha lipoic acid, coenzyme Q10, and L-glutathione and three antioxidants? What's the function of that in human body? Thank you.
Thank you so much for asking about these things. So all of these particular neurochemicals that you mentioned, the glutathione, the alpha, I didn't get all of them completely, but each one of them are indeed related to different metabolic functions in the body. Some may be hormones processed or produced in the liver in particular, and different liver enzymes that we check. It's important that we check these liver enzymes to see if there's any sort of dysfunction if one is placed on medications. So I do believe if you want to just send in, though, that is a WhatsApp message. I didn't hear them all clearly, but the last one that you said is indeed a liver enzyme. Hope that answers your question.
Good afternoon, Doc. My wife had COVID. She had gone through all the symptoms now, and it's over, but she's left with a cough and sleeping a lot. Night or day, she's always sleepy and drowsy. It's been almost 2 weeks post-COVID. Is this normal?
So 2 weeks post-COVID, yes, there's something called, and we discussed this right here, long COVID, L-O-N-G, long COVID syndrome, or a post-viral syndrome, where the patient may feel very lethargic, and that's why she's probably feeling that kind of exhaustion and sleepiness. It's also important that post-COVID, once she's cleared, because she probably may not have seen a healthcare professional, go be reviewed. During the time frame of COVID, she may not have done an x-ray. It's important now to get that x-ray so we can see if there's any deposits in the lower lungs, any mucus depositions that may predisposing the cough or worsening the cough. So 2 weeks post-COVID, yes, I'm very familiar with many patients that still had a cough up to 3 months post-COVID. There are many things you can do for her or she can do at home, starting with just utilizing your home cased humidifier or creating like a home nebulizer, or you can even utilize the nebulizers from the pharmacies. They are very useful, using a normal saline solution. Inhalation of those droplets helps reduce that long COVID cough. Hope that answers your question.
Good afternoon to you, doctor, and everyone else. My big question is, can someone use local chicken eggs along with grape juice to build up their blood levels? I'm asking the question from Grenada. Thank you. Meaning the yard eggs.
Great question. So yes, the proteins in the eggs does help towards building and adding that antioxidants, and it does help towards the red blood cells. It's not the food of choice, however, that I would go to build your blood levels. We definitely want to lean towards the yard bhaji, the spinach, those green leafy vegetables that will certainly have the high iron component. Even your legumes, chana, your seafood, salmon, sardine will help build the iron component. Keep in mind, for absorption of iron in the gut, vitamin C is crucially important. So you want to ensure you have some level of ascorbic acid. So any source of ascorbic acid, your citrus juices, even a vitamin C component, multivite, all of that would help. I do believe I heard that you mentioned, Bass, the person said he called messaging from Grenada. So a warm welcome to persons across the region tuned into your Lunchtime Doctor.
All right, Doc. Let's take a question. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Doctor. Can someone who had a blood clot and a stroke in the brain be cured?
Excellent question. So when we look at the word cure, that's a little difficult to establish cure. We certainly can treat you, we can manage you, we can prevent another stroke. But if there's damage to certain parts of the brain, there isn't reversal of that damage. And that's why it's so important that we talk about proactive and being proactive and rather than the reactive health. Because let's say the stroke was in the part of the brain that affects vision. Most likely, that part of the brain is affected, and that vision would be so severely affected, there won't be return of that vision. Let's say the stroke was in the part of the brain that affected mobility. Sometimes we can return through rehabilitation, the mobility, but there certainly is that damage to the brain. So I wouldn't answer in positive that the person will be cured, but we can certainly manage the patient, we can treat, and we can prevent the onset of another stroke. Hope that answers the question.
Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the Lunchtime Doctor.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm 70 years old. I will refer to the Shagwana's Health Center to do some tests on the heart. Now, the doctor told me I have to do an echocardiogram and a Holter test. However, I'm unable to find, where I can get this done. Can I get some help from the doctor, please?
Oh, certainly. I'm so sorry that you're not too sure. Let's try to explain, first of all, what the echocardiogram is and the Holter test. That is where we actually, as I just mentioned, we look at a more detailed pathology or the structure of the heart. Where can you get it done? In Chaguanas, there are a few private medical institutions. I won't necessarily mention them on the radio here, but you can simply put in a Google search, echo in Chaguanas, and you'll see the names coming up. It can be done in the private institutions. Unfortunately, it's not done in the Chaguanas Health Center, but the Chaguanas Health Center medical professionals can guide you as well to where that other further test can be done. It can be done in the tertiary institutions if you have to do it publicly, as in San Fernando General or Mount Hope or Port of Spain. But I would tell you to get it done quickly, do it through the private institutions. There are quite a few in Central, in locations in Port of Spain, and of course in South. Again, easy to find through a quick Google. I do wish I can actually call the names here, but that's not within our policies. Hope that answered the question.
All right, let's go to the WhatsApp. Dear doctor, my age group, is this good for my blood pressure in my age group? I'm 55 years old. What is a good blood pressure for someone in my age group? I'm 55 years old. And how important is sex at this age? I am a female.
So, blood pressure at this age, we want to look at 110 on 70, 120 on 80. So, your systolic on your diastolic, anywhere around those values. How important is sex? Sex is crucially important as a way of connecting, as a way of staying intimate, and even as a way of exercise. So, please ensure you're doing it in a protected way as well, and continue to also take care of your health.
All right, just about 11 more minutes before 1 o'clock. 627-3223, 625-2257. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. Hello, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. I just want to share some information, which I hope, you know, might be of benefit to others. As today, there's a lot of mention about strokes and heart attacks and anything related to heart. My family has a history of heart attacks, strokes, cholesterol problems, and when my children were born, my little ones, I had them tested on day two for cholesterol levels, because I thought to myself, if I know from now how much, if at all, they've got any cholesterol in their bodies, then I would know how to manage their diet as they grow. My son had no cholesterol in his body, but my daughter had. They told me my daughter had already cholesterol, which I assume now that we all have cholesterol in our bodies before, but where my concern was, I didn't want to add any more cholesterol, which the body already produced naturally. And I just thought maybe if that could be done with people with hereditary heart conditions, perhaps it would help, you know, to manage their diet as they grow, as they get older. Thank you.
Thank you for the feedback and the contribution. Yes, there is something called hereditary cholesteremia, and it can, and that's why we talk about family history is so important. And you're very wise in making sure you test from early. And yes, one can have this predisposition to high cholesterol, and that's why knowledge impacts upon our actions. Once we know, we can better act upon it.
All right, hello, good afternoon, welcome.
Hello, good day, sir. How are you doing? Someone, again, doing it in my stomach, and my school came out very, very fine. What is the problem? What could the problem be?
So any sort of burning in that stomach, one, we want to make sure it's not something called reflux or GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disease. We talked about stress, and that's something everyone has, and it predisposes persons to this burning. It may be an early onset of an ulceration, and that's where we would want to do one or two little investigations to rule out if there's any peptic ulcer, that's an ulcer higher up in the esophageal tract, or a duodenal ulcer, which is a little bit lower down in the intestines themselves. Both of them will cause that burning. You definitely need to watch what you're eating, watch the fried stuff, watch the peppery stuff, watch the high flavored, so like the curries, all of that may add to the burning. And of course, try to have small meals frequently through the day so that the stomach acids are not allowed to reflux and thereby worsen that burning. Hydration, crucial. Water will keep you at bay. So this is just some of the preliminary things to do. If the burning persists, please see your healthcare professional, because we can certainly put on a line of treatment to prevent or reduce that burning. Hope that answers your question.
All right, good afternoon, doctor. Could bad gut issues cause prostate problems?
Good question. Not necessarily, because they're two separate, different metabolic functions. The gut leading directly in terms of digestion, and prostate more so in the reproductive organs. They're not necessarily linked, but it is something that one may, if you do have a high cholesterol, it can affect both. So there are similar factors across the both. If one may present with high blood pressure, then it can affect both the gut and the prostate. So keep in mind that there can be one symptom affecting both, but gut problems won't lead to prostate problems.
All right, good afternoon, doctor. I'm 46 years young and has a fibroid the size of a lime located on the left and only acts up during my monthly cycle. The pain is like contractions during this time and lasts for 3 days. My flow is normal due to the myrrhea, though. Other than that, I'm fine. My question is, would you recommend a hysterectomy to get rid of this pain every month, or should I wait until I start menopause for relief?
Great question. What I would prefer in front of me so I can make that analysis is if I have an idea of the ultrasound, the position, and you did say where, and the size of the fibroid. We consider a number of things when we look at surgery. We definitely look at quality of life. And once your quality of life is being affected, then yes, surgery can indeed be an option. Your gynecologist will weigh the pros and cons for you. Should you wait until menopause? The thing about a fibroid, it won't go away because of menopause. But I would consider there is a laser surgery now just for removal of that one or two fibroids. You may not need to do a full-on hysterectomy. We can do something called a fibroectomy, just removal of the fibroid. So have that conversation with your surgeon, the gynecologist, and they will certainly guide into the pros and cons and the other options to remove or to ease the distress of the fibroid.
All right, Doc, we have just about 4 more minutes, so let's touch on some of the men's issues again before we go for the week.
Certainly. So we talked about getting to the heart of the matter, and one of the big heart risk factors, and we talked about this, but I will keep talking about it, is indeed stress. Stress, anger, anxiety. It raises not just your blood pressure, but it raises the stress hormone and restricts the blood flow to the heart. I want to say that again. Stress can not only raise your blood pressure, but stress can restrict blood flow to the heart. Sometimes if one is having an angry outburst, you are now risking a heart attack as much as 5 times greater, and your risk for stroke as much as 3 times greater. This is what the research has shown in terms of stress. Chronic stress now damages the arteries. Chronic stress can even lead to sexual problems. Chronic stress can affect your sleep. So all of that come together, it's like the perfect storm. We have discussed some of the ways to stress relief. We mustn't wait until it reaches the end stage to then decide we're going to do something. It's so important, not just with our meals, or females, everyone, even children can experience stress. And that's why just communicating about it, talking about it, opening up about it. In fact, it's said heart disease is your number one killer. Mental health challenges are indeed your number two killer across the region. So I want to implore, I want to encourage everyone today. Tomorrow is a holiday, Corpus Christi. I hope you're planting a plant somewhere. I hope you're finding time to engage in de-stressors, in healthy de-stressors. Myself and a couple friends are going on a hike early in the morning and then a woman empowerment session, like a retreat in the afternoon. Find things that bring you joy and encourage that de-stressing. You can be saving your life. And with that, I think we're close to the very end of this program. I do hope, Base, what's your plans for tomorrow as a holiday?
Well, besides working, I'll probably find something to plant. I don't know. I'll plant some work.
You plant to work, definitely. Yeah. Yes. Ensure you find some time to go out into nature and connect with. There are persons that even have plants in their home spaces. I myself have created now a little herb garden in the back, so I'm reducing my expenses. All of that are ways to manage your stress. There's financial stress as well. Next week, we're going to be talking about male menopause. Yes, folks, there is such a thing. And male infertility. We're touching on all of these hard topics. And we hope, just in having the conversation, you feel more comfortable to go to your doctor and discuss them.
All right. Thank you very much, Doc. And do enjoy your holiday tomorrow.
Indeed. And a warm thank you to every single caller, every single one. Take the time to de-stress. And of course, the entire TBC network that make this program possible for you all, our cherished listeners.
All right, folks. Of course, you've been listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. Final day for the week today. Course today, Wednesday, yeah, on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sky 99.5, Vibe City 105 FM, and Sangeet 106.1 FM. Do enjoy the rest of your day.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.